This is Jim Wallace from Shelburne Falls, Massachusetts, and I am the tech guy for cheesemaking.com, in addition to making a lot of fermented beverages, and you are listening to Cider Chat.
And this is episode 25. Hello and welcome to Cider Chat. My name is Rhea Windcaller, and I am your Cider MC. This is a weekly podcast where we speak to cider makers and cider enthusiasts from around the globe. And on this week's chat, we have Jim Wallace, who is pretty renowned for his cheese-making skills, and he is the tech guy for New England Cheese-Making Supplies. We're going to be doing a pairing with cider, his cheese, and so much more. So stay tuned for that. I do want to give you a little bit of a warning that this chat will make you want to lick your lips and maybe have a little bit of drooling there too, just thinking about, oh, what cider and what cheese I could have. Ooh la la, right? There is a Facebook page for Cider Chat, and I put a list of what you could get while you're listening to this chat. There are 6 different cheeses, and we had 4 different ciders. And that was a good place to start. You could always have more, but if you have too many, it could really overwhelm it. And speaking of the Facebook page, I just want to say thank you to Paul, Lewis, Robert, and Megan for joining in on the chat at Facebook. Thank you so much.
Going up.
Now, while we're gearing up for this cider and cheese pairing, and you're getting your glass ready and your blue cheese out, here I have a dilemma because it's a great offering to go see Tin Hat Cider, and that's in Vermont. And I got this email from Teddy, and he wrote, "Hi, Rhea. I've been enjoying your podcast. That's some great work you're doing, and I look forward to hearing more. I work alone, pruning trees, spreading compost, grafting, taking gravity readings, racking, bottling, stacking, cleaning, scrubbing, and tasting. And your podcasts keep me connected to the larger cider world from my little mountain outpost." Dang, I love that, Teddy. He wrote a little bit more, and we kind of decided, you know, I'm actually planning on going up to Vermont because I had made plans to go earlier during Vermont Cider Week, and that didn't work out. So I'm heading up there later on this month. And I told him that, and he gave me this selection. And this is where I need a little bit of input, if you could. Tell me what I should do. Teddy said, "The tree should be starting to show some pink by then. That's in late April. We could do an orchard walk and chat at the orchard, which is in Waitsfield, Vermont, or my basement cidery is a few miles down the road in Warren. Or if you have any interest in checking out some wild apple groves, some of the more unique ones are about a half hour drive south. Getting to them involves some bumpy jeep trails and long dirt roads up into the mountains, though." So those are 3 different choices. We have the orchard walk and chat. We have going into the cidery. Jim would say you should definitely call that a cellar there, Teddy, not a basement. Or taking that jeep ride up that bumpy road. So those are 3 different choices. What should I do, Ciderville? If you have any recommendations, well, you could send me an email like Teddy did, Rhea, that's R-I-A, at ciderchat.com, or tweet it out on Twitter, at ciderchat. And we'll figure it out. I'm looking forward to meeting a Teddy and getting out of this snow weather here. There's been a little bit of snow. Let's hope the trees are okay. It's time to get our foodie on, Ciderville, with Jim Wallace, who is both a cheese and craft libation artist, or shall we just say, a maker. Jim is a cheese tech, or what they call a cheese making guru, for New England Cheese Making Supply, located in Ashfield, Massachusetts. Ricky Carroll has been teaching cheesemaking since 1979, and she's the founder of New England Cheesemaking Supply. She's been doing that way before it was as uber as it is today as a hobby for so many cheese aficionados. So if you're sending a question to cheesemaking.com, he is your answer man. In his own home and cellar, he not only has a cheese cave that we'll be visiting, but also his wine, beer, and cider that he's conditioning. Jim has been awarded many ribbons for his craft libations, some of which we'll be tasting in this chat as he offers tips on pairing cider and cheese. We begin by taking a tour of his cellar so we could wet our whistle and find out what is possible in the land of Ciderville beneath a large old home on a residential street. Okay, we're heading down to Jim's cellar. Whoa, look at this. This is his cellar, absolutely.
So it's a little bit of a mess because I've been making a lot of cheese. Robin and I brought in 800 pounds of grapes this year, which we dealt with. And
800 pounds of grape?
Yeah. So I've been making beer, I've been making cider, wine, and this is my make room.
This is awesome. So let's just kind of describe it for listeners who aren't here. You know, we're in a space of probably, what is that, like 20 feet across?
Yeah, it's about 20 by about, 15.
Yeah. And we came down to the bottom into the first thing that we see from in the cellar are these, like, glasses lined up, and there's a nice... You know, this classic ice cider bottle, very long and slim.
When I tell my students when they come here, you're going to see two types of tech. You're going to see low-tech and no-tech. And this stainless steel table here I bought for 35 cents a pound at the scrapyard just before they crushed it. An old salad bar. It's insulated so I can run hot and cold water through it to control the temperature. A darkroom sink. The cooker platform I've got here is set up for two burners, and Frank McKetty and I, welded that on a day in February when it was 14 below zero outdoors.
Wow.
It was a brutal 2 days putting it together, but that works out pretty good. I do workshops in here, and I'll have as many as 15 people working in this little room. This whole house is 150 years old, and an old granite cellar. I thought it was just perfect for all things fermentable. The big furnace room, we used to have a big monster furnace over here. Now it's just, I filled it up with all of my my other stuff. Grape crusher and presses and storage place for some of my beverages in glass here. We have a beer, a very hoppy beer going here. This is sort of the overflow from this past year's winemaking. This is the barrel room here where I have basically, once they've spent 2 years in barrels, my wines have spent 2 years in barrels, they go into stainless for maybe another year and then I bottle them. We have a Pinot Noir. We have actually an Alianico grown in the Susan Bay area, part of San Francisco Bay. We have a fabulous GSM over here, Grenache Syrah Mourvèdre, Southern Rhone style. Several different vineyards out of California. And we have a Primitivo, actually grown in California also. This is another barrel, and this is a sour red ale. Flemish style red that I started in 2004, and I keep it going. I'll pull off 5 gallons out of the 15, maybe once a year, and I'll drop it onto cherries, sour cherries, something like that. Small container is a natural cider from Pine Hill that I mentioned earlier, and then just last week I dropped about an ounce and a half of hops. An ounce and a half of hops is a lot. Once you put them back into the liquid, they swell up. And next to it is a little bit bigger cider that's been fortified with some honey, a little bit of brown sugar, the raw sugar, and then I followed it up with a few ounces of bourbon and French oak chips.
I've always been a fan of basements that are tricked out with a cellar for storing libations, where you can blend and create without having to move the ping pong table, the dog's bed, winter clothing, and whatnot out of the way to make your cider. Jim has a cellar that any one of us in Ciderville would drool over. The rooms are partitioned off partly because that works best in a 150-year-old home that began with a fieldstone foundation. He's done a grand job of creating an old-world feel to his cellar with the 5-gallon oak barrels and shelving for bottle conditioning of all his wares. After taking me from the front end of the cellar to the back, we finally come upon a wooden door that has a small metal plate that merely says cave upon it. He opens the door and enters first. The room is long and narrow, maybe about 5 feet across and 9 feet in length. To the left of the door, I see 3 or 4 stainless steel logs and tubing that Jim informs me leads up to the kitchen draft system. Yep, the cheese guru is styling with his own in-house tap system. The temperature is cool in the cave, and I soon find out that with cheese, it's all about maintaining moisture.
This pretty much, it's a little bit warmer here. I keep it at 52 to 53 degrees all the time. I usually have the moisture a lot higher, but need something for my humidifier to bring it back up. So it's been down for the last 2 or 3 days and it needs to get pumped back up again. So that means I'll probably have to dump some water on the floor.
So we're in this room. Jim, you're about
7.
Okay.
It's about 8-9 feet high.
Okay. It's a long, narrow room. Yeah. And there's multiple shelves. Yeah. And on some of the shelves, he has cheeses in these like plastic, kind of like cake holding.
Yeah.
And then some of them are just sitting out on the wooden shelves, kind of curing, right? That's what you call it, curing.
Right. Yeah. You smell this.
Oh, my gosh.
Smell the surface.
It's like this aroma of cheese. I mean, how do you describe that smell? It's just so rich and
yeah, it's a lot. It's a really meaty. It's almost an egg yolk. It's a lot of hydrogen and sulfur components, and it's all formed by bacteria. This surface, this sort of orangey reddish surface, is all basically bacterial mold growth on top.
Okay. Yeah. And what was that cheese I just smelled?
It's actually based on the cheese called raclette. It's a soft, creamy Alpine-style cheese. And this is a very, very crusty. This is like a tombe de savoir that basically you can see my hands just from handling it. A pretty good mold crust on it. You can see how it's actually growing on the top here, just rising right up.
Yeah.
So ready to be cut. And
what is that? Is that different kinds of molds that
it
go
is.
On
it's all
it,
molds.
Right?
It's like lichen growing on a rock, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so many cheeses look that way. And this is a cheese based on Caciocavallo. It's a stretched curd, similar on the path between mozzarella and provolone, and filled with hot peppers that I've,
You're able to cut into the cheeses and then leave them here?
Yeah,
and then kind of come back and kind of taste and see as they're aging.
I have a special tool called a trier. It looks like an apple core, except it's much thinner, and you push it into the cheese, you pull a core sample out, pretty much see what's happening. Sometimes you can just tell by looking at it what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
You can look at, see how the protein is changing. You can taste it. You can smell is really important, and you can sort of smell what's actually happening. You shove it back in and just smear the surface, and it seals itself right back up again. Goes back to aging.
Have you been making cheese?
Since about 2000.
And then you started...
And I started working with Ricky Carroll.
And that's New England cheese making.
New England cheese making supply. Yeah, Ricky was a cheese queen, and she's now stepped back for her daughter to take over. So Sarah is the... I guess she's the cheese princess now.
That's a great role.
Yeah, very,
to have
very
a good
cool.
title.
Very cool. Yeah, let's head back up and we can talk about some ciders and some cheese and... What goes with what?
Once back upstairs in the kitchen, we were ready to delve in to the next stage of the afternoon, pairing cheese with cider, or at least figuring out what our palates were telling us What Jim said next really resonated with me and is probably the key thing to remember as we're going through this tasting.
I get this all the time with people asking about doing things with cheese, mixing cheeses with wine, burying them in grape skins. And you just have to look and see what the two flavors have to offer. You really have to trust your own nose and taster.
Your own nose and taster. Is it as simple as that? Is that all I need to do to figure out cheese and cider pairing? Well, partly, but not quite. It's about getting to know the makeup of the cider and the makeup of the cheese itself. They're both equally important. And that means you and I get to savor over amazing ciders and cheeses from around the world to figure out what fits our own nose and our own taster. Next, Jim and I go through a range of ciders that we try with the six following cheeses. We had a sheep cheese, a goat cheese, what we call a stinky cheese, a blue cheese, a gouda, and a cheese that Jim made that is kind of like a Munster with a bit of jalapeno peppers. And I just want to say, wow, that one really set it off with the apple in each of those ciders. And then we tried that with a pairing of a carbonated and sweet cider, a dry, a farmhouse from Millstone Ciders in Maryland, and an ice cider that just knocked my socks off.
We really have a range of ciders here, okay? Not exactly dry, but a lot more complex flavors in this one with the bourbon and oak and sugar addition, so it's a little higher gravity. This one is very, very high gravity.
You're talking about the ice cider now.
Yeah, the ice cider is very high gravity. Has a real caramelly, buttery sort of finish to it. Definitely dessert.
And when you're saying high gravity,
I'm talking about the, they're talking about bricks or specific gravity.
Which translates to ABV or alcohol by volume.
Yeah, it does, it does. Right. So this is not very, it starts out at a very, very high gravity. I think this started about 34 bricks. Not exactly sure where I ended it, but the total alcohol is probably less than 13%. So it's no more alcoholic than a wine. Went on a little shopping spree yesterday.
I see you went a little shopping. Yeah. That was like, oh, look at that. Was that down in North?
This is,
from Provisions?
Provisions, yeah.
Yeah, that's a great store down in Northampton.
This is my favorite person out of Holland, who they've gotten to know there as well.
Oh, yeah.
She's probably the finest presenter of the Dutch cheeses. And this is the cheese from the Blue Deal Baron. This is the local cheese from just over the mountain, Crooked Creek Farm. And this is a very, very, it's just sort of in the style of Kaltabassi.
The first cheese you put down from the Netherlands, and that looks much like what folks have been to Amsterdam. If you ever got like old Amsterdam cheese,
right.
It's that orange color. There's like an orange rind on the outside here. It's a hard cheese.
Yes, yeah.
And then the second cheese you put down looks like
it's a very soft, buttery blue from the Auvergne of France.
Okay. And so it does have that kind of mottled look with the blue cheese. And then this very soft cheese that kind of, you know, first glance, it looks like croissant, you know, but you could look a little deeper and say, oh, that smooth appearance. The outside of it looks like a croissant.
Right. So what we've got here, we've got a real range. And then this is the only cheese that I'm bringing up out of the cellar right now because it's a very soft home-style cheese that has smoked jalapeno flakes in it.
I see that, yeah.
And then these ones I just went out and got today. Friends from Sidehill Farm in the hills around us here just came back from Spain with 200 pounds of cheese in their luggage. 200 pounds of cheese in their luggage, which they are breaking up into tasting sessions for their big fans.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And so this is the first time these cheeses have ever shown up in the U.S. Here we have a sheep's milk cheese, and then we have a goat's milk cheese.
They're both hard cheeses.
Yes, yes.
And they're white, and they have a little outside rind again. The one to the left, which is the goat cheese,
right.
Has a kind of like a, almost if you're grilling fish or something on the grill, it has on the outside the rind, it's kind of like a crossbar.
Mm-hmm.
And then this one here is sheep,
mm-hmm.
correct?
And has a traditional banding marks that you see in normal Manchego.
Let me get a photo of that banding mark if I could, because that's just beautiful. It's like art. Work itself, isn't it? How do they do that banding mark? Is that like
it's the forms. It's the forms
the
that
forms
basically
that
have the patterns.
Okay. Yeah.
We have a real range of flavors. And now we have to figure out what goes with what. We'll start with the dry cider.
That's something that a lot of people could get on the market pretty easy, is a dry cider.
Yeah, yeah.
It's available everywhere.
The dry ciders are becoming more and more common. I mean, even 5 years ago, I think a dry cider was a hard sell.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, it's a dry still cider. But the only thing, this one actually is done with bought culture. It's done with the packaged culture. The batch that I made this past fall, I made just naturally, just whatever came from the juice and the apples from from Pine Hill. Has developed over the years, and that's the natural yeast that I'm using. But this one actually has a packaged yeast. I added a little bit of sugar to bring it up a little bit, which mm-hmm. I didn't do this year.
Mm-hmm.
And
did you put the sugar in on the back side, or when you were...
I always put it in the front. I don't like to get... to really make the bacteria work too hard after they've been working, because you might just catch them at a wrong time and they just stop working. So I basically give them the juice that I want them to ferment right up front.
I love that attitude.
Yeah.
It's like they're, these like little living things. So, and they are, definitely. Bacteria is a living thing.
Dry cider. You taste it and fix in your mind what it tastes like. So not a lot of sugar, not a lot of alcohol normally. It has a relatively lean character, but it has the character of the orchard. It has the tannins. It has the fermented sugars, which becomes the alcohol, and the alcohol provides a little bit of sweet flavor, not necessarily residual sweetness, because this is really pretty dry. I pretty much max this one here out.
Mm-hmm.
So what goes with what? In the cheeses that we have here, we have to look at the amount of moisture in the cheeses and the fat content of the cheeses. A really, really fatty cheese is going to need something to break through that fat layer in your mouth. We're going to have to taste all of these together to really know what we like.
Is there a right way to kind of try this stuff, as a cheese aficionado? Or you just kind of
nibble it in your mouth and you smush it around and you try to increase the surface area. That's what our teeth are for and our tongues. Yeah. Just smush it around, and then the first thing I would do is I would wet my mouth first.
Okay, with a little bit of cider. Cheers.
Or a lot of cider.
Uh-huh.
Oh, dear cider, how you lead me astray. At first, we're going to go right into the pairing with the cider and the cheese, but after that first sip of cider, we had to spend a little bit of time just talking about that.
Wow, that's tasting sweet.
Oh, yes, that is.
Why is that? Surprising.
Yeah.
Maybe it's because of the ciders that I've been making lately are much drier than this one.
Mm, yeah, but
this one did have some sugar, so it's not as dry as I had hoped. But
the finish is, astringent and drying. So,
yeah. So it does have the tannins. The tannins are actually going to be good working with the cheese.
Okay.
So you look at all the qualities, and it has that apple essence. You get that. Sort of smell. The whole idea of combinations is bringing things together in a happy assemblage, make a happy wedding,
Right.
So try a piece of the cheese.
Okay, yeah. So this has a little bit of the jalapenos in it.
A little of the jalapeno.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to mush it all together here.
And just mush it up against the top of your mouth.
Mm-hmm.
And then dollop a little bit of cider.
Mm.
But you get the acid in there, nice. You get the milk. A little bit of the peppers. You can't put too many peppers in because then you blow out the aspect of the melt. But it's a real happy combination.
It is. It's delicious. And the cider itself that we're having, again, this is the one that we're looking at for dry. It has a little bit of sweetness in it, but it's really, it's as if the cheese comes together with the cider and you're kind of clearing, you know, the savoriness is just kind of like coming together between the two and saying, we like this.
Right. But you notice how the acidity of the cheese tends to take away the sweetness that we
initially had.
So the cider is very different when you taste it with this cheese.
Yeah.
Now let's try it with the stinky cheese here.
Some food, especially cheese with the cider, it just really brings out a different...
One character can take out another character,
right,
or they can blend well together. You're thinking this in terms of a contrast or a marriage, a happy balance of the two.
You're cutting into the stinky cheese. This is a very soft cheese here. He's cutting away some of the rind. You don't want to eat the rind.
Some people do. I'm just being nice to you today. quite often you do take a little bit of the rind. I usually encourage people to try the rind.
Right.
Yeah. And if you pick it up in your fingers and feel the texture of this cheese, and it will tell your mouth a whole lot about what's coming. The food you want to play with.
Yeah.
It's really soft.
It's a nice light yellow, kind of buttery yellow.
Right.
And very pliable.
Right.
It has a lot of stinkiness to it.
Not as much as the rind. Once you cut the rinds away, that's now, smell the surface of the cheese. And we'll see. That can get really high. That can get really
high. That must have been, but this is very...
But very buttery.
Yeah, buttery.
That's a beautiful texture.
Kind of yeasty, too, smell to it.
Mm-hmm. So, let me see now. I'm going to open the sparkling.
Should I not have it with this dry?
Well, we're going to have two sides. That's why I have two glasses here.
Okay. All right. But, you know, I'm going to try this with the dry cider.
Try it with the dry cider, too. Now, you notice how that just smears, that cheese just smears all over the inside of your mouth. It's everywhere in there.
Mm-hmm.
And then...
What I notice as I take a sip of the cider is that, wow, it just brought an intense flavor of that cheese and just washed it.
In the back of your throat.
Yeah.
In the back of your throat, it throws up. It really brings out that almost caramelly buttery, butterscotchy flavor of it all.
They seem happy together. And now Jim has just opened a second bottle, and it is quite...
Looks like champagne.
Nice and sparkling there. A lot of effervescence. And you could hear those bubbles.
A lot going on in this one.
There is, yes.
You get the orchard.
I do get the orchard. And
a little bit of bourbon. You get a little corn in there.
Kind of letting the bubbles kind of come down before I sip.
Yeah.
Really nice kind of straw color. Not the clarity isn't like perfect, but that I like that.
Clarity is highly overrated.
Well said.
Mm. Let's try this again.
You're trying to like say which is the right combination of the two cheeses. You go back and say, well, you know, that dry worked well with the stinky cheese. Would it work well with the bourbon? I mean, in my mind, though, it seems like every cheese would go well with cider. But do you agree? Because some folks say,
there will be some that don't go as well. You know, it's like everything is a matter of degrees.
Mm-hmm. Or personal preference, too.
I mean, if I only had one cheese in the house and a glass of cider, I'd probably be happy.
That's true.
Yeah, what is best? If you have choices.
And the excitement of discovery, I think, is what it's really about.
We're going back to the jalapeno cheese.
Okay, so this is, again, kind of a semi-soft.
Right. And a little more acidic.
Mm-hmm.
So a real contrast between these two cheeses right now.
Absolutely.
So we go back and we try carbonated cider. This one, cheese gets blown away.
I agree. Absolutely.
That just doesn't hold up to this cider at all.
That's right.
You know. We go back and we try this one.
Thank you. So we're going back to the stinky one, the very soft cheese.
Mm-hmm.
Try this. Oh, let it kind of roll around in our mouth.
Mm-hmm.
And now we take a sip of this more sparkling, the one with the bourbon.
Still tough. I mean, the cider's still blowing away.
It is. It is.
Even the strength of that cheese.
Yeah.
So let's get serious. Let's go. Let's go to there's two cheeses we're going to do here, and I think I'm going to we're going to go to blue.
That's what I was thinking. Like, my first thought was you really need something that's going to be very strong in your mouth.
I sort of figured that these two would be blown out by by the bigger cider.
Mm-hmm.
So here you go. Oops. Anyhow, there you go.
All right. I'll just
catch it as you can.
Okay.
Use your fingers.
All right. So now we're going for the blue cheese.
Now we're
going
to go for the blue cheese. And we're going to drink the carbonated cider first.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this one has butter, cream. And then the blue. So that all that blue in there, what it does is all around each of these little spots of blue, it sends out enzymes. As that blue grows, it sends out enzymes. And you can see the cheese is not tight and solid. Lots of holes through it. So air can get in here and help this Roquefort type mold grow. And what it does is these enzymes break down the proteins and they produce all of these really, really wonderful flavors. Aldehydes and alcohols and everything else, and that's what you get in blue. So inside your mouth right now should be this wonderful creamy filling. And let's see what this.
And when you're chewing or you're mushing around that blue cheese into your mouth, you know, it's almost, you're kind of like crunching a little bit of the blue. It's just so rich of a cheese.
Wow, even that one didn't.
I know.
Hold up.
It didn't hold up to that
this
sparkling
is actually
cider.
A bigger cider than I thought. You know?
Yeah. So there's that question now. You have cider. What do you do?
I don't think we have a cheese on the table, but we're going to go to the goat cheese next. And the capric proteins in the goat cheese are. This is why a lot of people don't like goat cheese, because they're really strong and they're sharp. So maybe that will match up with this particular cider.
Can you talk about what you're talking about, the capra?
It's the capra meaning goats.
Of goat. Okay.
Right. So
capra means goats.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Proteins break down into these particular variations of capric acids, and that's what that flavor is in goat milk. So.
And isn't that a matter of, like, sometimes I have goat cheese from different farms, and
depending
on where
it's the herd, it's like in French cheeses. French cheeses are, goat cheeses are very strong in that flavor, because usually when you go to France and you visit a cheesemaker, the goats and the does are, like, right next to one another. And they stink. They really, really stink.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They pee all over themselves. That's what it is.
Really?
It really stinks. They think it's a really
trivia question.
You know? But milk is like tofu. I mean, milk will pick up flavors of wherever it's at. So milk will pick up flavors of the barn. You can actually infuse things into it. I do a series of yogurts that have all kinds of wonderful spices in them, which I just infuse into the milk, you know, things like that. So it picks up things very easily. So this is going to be actually a very different texture.
Mm-hmm. So this is the goat cheese. It's much harder.
Much firmer.
Yeah, much firmer.
And this is very typical of toma. Toma simply means a piece of cheese, a wheel of cheese. You make the curds and you put them into a form, you dry them out to a certain extent, and then you put them away to age for a while. And that's basically what you get. And that's what we've got here now.
Mm-hmm.
So let's start with the big one here again. Is that the...
That's a big one. Little sparkling. Kind of mush around her mouth.
Yeah.
Kind of taking that kind of like farmer style, but the goat.
What do you have in your mouth right now?
With just the goat.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it reminds me of that kind of farm style cheese that is just very clean. It's milky, you know, like a milky lactose type of.
Right.
I'm getting.
But do you get the dryness on your tongue from the tannins? There's some tannins in there.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, okay, that's what it is.
Right. And it sort of dries your mouth.
Yeah.
And then back further in your palate, you're getting a different flavor. And that's the flavor of the capra.
Capra, okay, lovely.
So let's see how this washes across that.
I think that's getting closer. Yeah.
So it didn't wash away. Mm-mm. That flavor. No. So now what you have is this sort of sweet, little bourbon-y profile, a little bit of oak in there going back. So the oak will also have some tannins in it. And so these are all the things that are, you know, the more you understand about the cheeses, I mean, what's happened in the food world today is amazing. Throw all that aside and just go back to what's happening inside here, inside your head, inside your mouth. What is your brain telling you? And it's about texture, it's about moisture, it's about flavor, it's about all the different components, the proteins, how they're broken down, the tannins, everything else. You know, it's not all that complex, but it's just like, so you have to work on a couple of different levels.
And I think it also starts with what we're doing here today, which is trying it in a little array of different styles of the cider, and then going to a good cheese shop and getting some variation, a sheep, a goat, a blue would be a good one to have in a tasting. A stinky cheese, and what would you
call? A real stinky cheese.
A real stinky cheese.
There's something called Ypres. Ypres is a cheese in France, near the Burgundy area, that in Paris, it is the only, with the tourophiles in France, that means cheese lovers, to have a cheese that is unacceptable on public transportation says a lot for the cheese. It's illegal to carry this cheese on a bus in France, but wrap it up well.
Wallace and Gromit would be so happy.
Yeah, really.
Now, Ciderville, I suspect you might be getting a little thirsty and a little bit hungry just thinking about what it would taste like to have some cider and cheese right now. Just go to episode 25, Jim Wallace, Cider Pairing with a Cheesemaker, and you'll be able to find a list of what you can get to have your own little smorgasbord of amazing flavors and figure out what your nose and taste are saying that fits your palate perfectly. Cider Chat brings the sights, sounds, and tastes of Ciderville right to you every week. It takes a whole lot of time and artistic tweaking to create this podcast, which is why I started a Patreon page. Patreon is a website that helps content creators like me, your Cider MC, generate funds. And you, in turn, can become an official patron of the arts. When you're on CiderChat.com looking at all the awesome photos and show notes from this chat with Jim Wallace, you will see a link to my Patreon page. For even $1 a month, you can become a patron of this podcast. Please help keep this chat thriving. I'm counting on you, Ciderville. It's going to take more than one person to plant this orchard.
What goes with this high carbonated, high sugar, very flavorful cider, we would have to move a step up on the blue scale, and we would have to go up to like one of the Spanish blues. There's a cheese called Valion, which is one, it'll just burn your mouth. I mean, really, the heat is so high.
If you have a really full-bodied cider, you're going to need a really full, not just stinky, but really full-bodied cheese.
With a lot of character. Not just a body, to me, means texture.
Okay.
And what you need is a really strong flavor to cut through.
Oh, my gosh. You know what happens to cider in my cup? Goes quick, Jim.
I understand that.
You're recommending now we try the sheep with the
Let's try it with the dry cider first. Cider first,
Alrighty. So this is...
Definitely firm. Okay. Definitely firm. This really looks like a Manchego. They wouldn't be happy. The producers wouldn't be happy with me saying that because it comes from a totally different area than Manchego.
Sure.
And I think personally that this is actually very, very, very unusual for that part of Spain to be very wet and grassy, but it's one of the wettest parts of Spain in Andalusia. It's the Sierra Grazia Lima, if I'm saying that right, if I'm not, sorry. I think I tasted it early. I just went out and picked these up today. They just brought these back from Spain about a week or so ago. There's a lot more fruit in there. Mm-hmm. So I want to try that with the dry cider first. Mm-hmm. They come real nice together. And like right in the middle of my mouth is sort of this thing that's happening. That it doesn't taste of the Manchego and it doesn't taste of the cider. So really good.
Really nice, yeah.
Really
and I could imagine if this was even a little bit less sweeter, mm-hmm. it would really,
right.
like, really bring it out
right.
even at the a notch up.
Right, right.
Because I get a little bit of that sweetness there.
Right. The sweetness definitely, any sweetness in the cider is going to mask some of the complexities of mm-hmm. the cheese. But, yeah. But nonetheless, it's good.
Mm-hmm.
And then try it with the other.
Now we're trying it with the sparkling.
We'll call that the full flavored cider.
The full flavored cider, okay.
Full set flavored cider plus with all of the bourbon and stuff in there.
You know, that's kind of interesting because I'm getting a bit of the bourbon, but I actually do like the way, just around the perimeter of my mouth, I'm getting a little bit of that this again, this is the cheese with the sheep milk. I'm getting, it kind of pulls it away. You know, it's nothing
right.
like with the dry.
Mm-hmm. Don't forget those bubbles. Those bubbles, it's all carbonation. They're gonna basically carry things around your mouth. When you first taste this, it's sort of, you know, like many ewe's milk, sheep's milk cheeses. They're a little bit grainy. But there's also, they seem a little bit tannic too.
Yes.
But the cider tends to buoy it up a little bit, tends
mm-hmm.
to,
mm-hmm.
yeah. So, pretty good, huh?
Yeah.
This rind is totally edible.
Okay.
The rind is always a little bit, a little more concentrated because that's where all the transpiration happens. That's where all the coming and going of moisture and air coming in. So, and it tends to dry out a little bit more, so you get more intense flavors near the rind. And that's always worth tasting the rind with a little more cider.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. The full-bodied cider,
mm-hmm.
it could overpower it. I mean, I really get that. So you're having to pay attention with this particular cheese to say, am I noticing that?
Right, right, right.
Versus with the dry and that same cheese, it's so well-balanced that it makes you notice it. So, you know, there's a way that you could just consume right. cider and cheese and be, you know, sitting watching right. the TV and not really realizing what you're doing.
Right. Yeah.
And I just had a little bit of the rind there, and it's like a more deeper type of flavor than the actual, but you don't call it the meat of it, of course. What do you call, like, the rind?
The body of the cheese.
The body
or,
of the cheese.
It's really called the paste.
The paste.
The paste, yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah, like the pasta.
Is that
yeah.
true with any cheese inside?
Yeah, the paste, yeah.
Is the paste, P-A?
The paste, or like...
Paste,
yeah.
Wow, yeah.
Or the body of the cheese, yeah.
Right, so that rind has like a bit of a bite, and that awakens.
We've all had cheese curds,
mm-hmm.
and they're pretty innocuous.
Mm-hmm.
The flavor, basically what you're going to get is you're going to get the flavor of the milk, sort of like mozzarella.
Mm-hmm.
But once you press them in a form and salt them and put them on a shelf to dry for a while and age for a while, a lot of things begin to happen. And near the surface is where excess moisture is leaving and fresh air is coming in.
Mm-hmm.
The proteins and the butterfats inside and all the enzymes are working together. So there's all kinds of biological processes happening. Not so much biological. It's more enzymatic processes after the first week or so. So where it all meets is where it's really active is right at the very surface. If you've ever opened a true Camembert at various ages, you'll see the outside is very jelly-like, very translucent.
Mm-hmm.
And as you get towards the center, there's the heart of the cheese that's unripe. And depending upon how you choose your cheese, you're gonna get that. But so the difference between the center and the rind is going to be very different flavor in cheese.
Mm-hmm.
So you should always taste the center of the cheese as well as the a little bit of the rind anyhow, no matter how funky it is.
The center first and then go out. Mm-hmm. Like just looking at this sheep cheese, you could see that. You could see the coloration changes. It's very light.
There you go. See that?
Yeah, yeah. Very clearly.
So you can actually see it's called centripetal. So in other words, it's from the outside to the center. And in the case of this tabassi, this really, really soft cheese, it's totally gone through the entire cheese. There's no demarcation. It's all turned to that that sort of like gel-like structure. Mm-hmm. So I've gone back to the tabassi, which has this really sort of funky, hard outside rind. And I'm going to just try a small piece of the rind on that one. It's going to be a little bit gritty because of the washing of the curd. Mm-hmm. But there's a very, very different flavor there, isn't it?
There is a really different.
Let's see how that does with the big.
A little mushroomy.
Yeah, a little mushroomy. Yes, yes. Mm-hmm. It would be a very good description. So we'll do the big cider. Now remember, it didn't pass the combination test before, but the rind does. So
yes.
Different parts of the cheese.
Yeah, I love that actually, that combination, because I guess I'm really a big fan of mushrooms in general. You know, that kind of like earthy mushroomy taste, and it just like bounced right with that.
But get the aftertaste now. It's like after eating hot food, it's sort of like this glow that happens in your mouth. A lot of things are happening now, so it's really cool.
Yeah, it is really cool, and I like the idea of tasting cheese and really going through to the rind. Don't fear the rind. Some people peel it away.
Fear no rinds.
Yeah, use it all. Use it all.
I don't know if I should tell this story, but there's a cheese that I tend to stay away from. Comes from Sardinia that is alive. It is alive.
Meaning?
The cheese flies land, they lay their eggs, and they leave it. And this is the part of the cheese that they love, with the maggots.
Okay, back up a little bit. What lays it?
The flies.
The flies.
The cheese flies. Yeah. And they lay their eggs, and then...
What are they laying their eggs on?
On the cheese.
Oh, any particular cheese?
Particular cheese they make in the area. It's a relatively soft cheese. And as they burrow in, it just turns this whole thing to this really soft and very, very strong, high... A lot of oxidation happens, and it's just really, really a strong cheese. It's not a favorite cheese of mine. I've never really thought what would probably some kind of high alcohol would go with that.
For a lot of different reasons, right?
Yeah,
well.
But you say all rinds?
Mm. Yeah, that's
all
true.
Cheeses.
That's true. I mean, what we're looking at here is real artisanal cheeses. You know, would I want to try the rind from a very highly processed cheese? Probably not.
You wouldn't get much of a rind from a highly processed cheese. They really tend to package them such that rinds do not form. There's so much focus being done right now on wines and on ciders about natural fermentations and just letting it go. Go with natural bacteria from where the fruit came from and where the milk came from. Mm-hmm. You know?
This is given to me by Kurt Shearer from Millstone Cider. It's a Maryland cidery. There is a previous episode with Kurt. And so this is called Farm to Bottles, Unfiltered American Traditional Oak Barrel Fermented and aged cider with a blend of our tart heirloom cider apples. A sharp and smoky recreation of pure flavors, farm values, and heritage. And he has a mention of the different apples in here. So Jonathan, Stamen Winesap, and Smokehouse. And this is batch number 5 that we're going to try. And I haven't tried any. Oh, could hear that. Nice little effervescence coming up. There you go, Jim. I'm pretty excited to try the cider.
Yeah.
Oh, look at that. Nice.
This one's very nicely carbonated.
Mm-hmm. A little less than your other one there.
Oh, nice aroma. So it's a really good idea to get acquainted with the cheese and the beverage on their own terms first. Mm-hmm. You know, the nose and then the flavor.
Farmy, really, the oak is so subtle. Just a super delicious cider.
We may have to go out on the porch and finish that right.
Holy smokes. Yeah, I promise to bring a little bit home.
That's a real good
cider. Yeah, that's a good cider, and pretty excited to have that. So
yeah.
I'm thinking that this is, again, a very full-bodied cider. But at the same time, it doesn't have some of the full body that last one had.
Right.
It's not
now, sweet. This basically is fermented down to a dryness that is going to give it the tartness to balance some of these other cheeses. So,
And I know that he's not, as far as I know, not adding any kind of sugars to that cider either.
Oh, really?
Right.
Really?
Now, I'm pretty sure. I could
be wrong. It seems to have more body than...
I'm thinking not. Just being a traditionalist in that way,
I'm
pretty sure no.
Okay, good. So let's go back to our original cheese. There's a little piece of this here we can split up.
And this original cheese is the cheese that you made.
Yeah,
has
right.
A little
that's,
bit of the jalapenos.
Has the jalapeno peppers in there.
We'll roll it around in our mouth a little bit first before trying.
Now, as soon as I put the cheese in my mouth and go back to smelling the cider, now the cider smells different because don't forget, there's this retronasal thing that happens in the back of your throat. As you go back, there's openings up into the back of your, there's sensories back in here in your nostrils, and so you get that. It's almost like I'm almost picking up a little cinnamon in this now.
Yeah, that the peppers kind of like open up the
right,
whole
right.
aroma.
Right, the peppers was really going with this cider nicely on the aroma. And you get the aroma of the pepper, too. It really changes everything, doesn't it?
It really changes everything. It's made a little bit of heat there, but for my palate, I find it really enjoyable. It kind of opens it up. It's a little drying in that way, but... it opened up a lot of the dimensions of that cider to another level.
That's pretty refreshing, isn't it?
Yeah, really.
Let's try the stinky cheese.
Again, we're going to try this with the... This is the Millstone cider, batch number 5.
You got your
I do have a little bit here. Yeah. I lose it a bit.
The whole thing tends to make everything neutral with this particular cheese.
It comes about after.
Right. Yep.
It's interesting.
That's the retronasal aspect of it all.
Okay, yeah.
So let's try, I left you a little piece of the rind,
which is
the strongest part of the cheese.
From the stinky cheese.
We'll go back to this one again.
Same cider.
The aromatics of the cider get better and better.
Yeah, this is a pretty amazing cider.
It's a little more interesting. Cider is... is blowing it away a lot.
Yeah. I think you need something that's going to really say, "Wow, look at me! I'm a cheese."
Right.
And you better pay attention.
Yeah. So a stronger blue or a real aged pecorino, what they call stagionato in Italy, would be good.
We're trying the goat right now.
Yep. This must be good because it's leaking out of my glass like crazy.
This is, again, the Millstone cider. And I think it kind of pops up a little bit more than the stinky did in that way, because the goat is pretty strong. I like it, actually. I could really imagine this with a cracker, because that's the other piece, too. We're not really even doing the cheese with the cracker. A certain, like, maybe peppery cracker would be a nice thing with the goat and that cider.
Yeah, I tend to not like bread products with
interesting.
When I taste cheese.
Okay,
because
all right.
it gets in the way. I mean, if you're,
I could hear that.
Trying to cheese and... something else. I mean,
sure.
Yeah.
And if you're still trying to keep it gluten-free, too, forget about it.
Yeah.
We tried the Millstone cider with the goat cheese and then with the rind of the goat cheese.
I feel like my mouth is hovering over some lichened moss in the forest floor, and I'm sucking the air in, and it's like going through my mouth and out through my nose and saying hello. And now I'm going to try some of the cider.
It's interesting.
It take away.
It's a wild forest floor sort of thing. I wouldn't put it at the top of my list.
No.
No.
My favorite pairing here is with your cheese, with that jalapeno, the spiciness really, boom.
It did.
It did fairly well.
And it did better with this than with the sweeter, strong cider. You know, so we had two strong ciders here we were working with. Very different strong ciders.
Now what Jim is doing, he's opening up his ice cider. And did you do this on a cold winter night, or did you do it in a freezer?
I did it in a freezer. It takes several days to freeze that much cider. I usually do it in small buckets. And then I like to keep it at 27 degrees during the thawing, so I'm not getting all of the water rushing out. So basically, at that temperature, you're going to get a lot of the sweet sugars running out.
The concentration here of volume, you had the sweet cider that you then froze to create this. And what was the volume of the sweet cider?
My sweet cider start with about 15 gallons, comes in usually somewhere around 11 or 12 bricks. Usually target about 34 bricks to 36 bricks. This one I think was actually closer to 40 bricks, so this was a much higher.
So you had 15 gallons, and then it went down to how many gallons?
Down to 3 gallons.
Okay.
Correct that part of it.
Well, we're a little bit cidered in here, so, you know, we got to, now it becomes where we have to start
now
helping
three,
each other.
Now we need 3 glasses. But
trying this ice cider that you made. It's a really deep amber color.
This, again, has been on oak probably 2 years. Do you get the butterscotch caramel?
Yes, I do. Yeah, thank you for mentioning that. Sometimes all the flavors kind of come in, and you're like, where do I begin?
We begin wherever the path to Ciderville takes us. We tried 6 different types of cheese with 4 different cider styles. My favorite was undoubtedly Jim Wallace's homemade cheese with jalapeno pepper. It brought a spicy essence to the apple in every bottle we tried, lifting up both the cheese and the cider, and leaving a full mouth feel and happy taste buds. But of course, right? Here I was, in his house, viewing his cheese cave, tasting his ciders, and the farm gate cider from what Kurt Shear likes to call rustic cider at Millstone Cellars in Maryland. Terroir ruled the day at the cider and cheese pairing, as it does any time we sit down with good friends and crack open a bottle of cider made with love and good intentions. Thank you, Jim, for sharing a peek into your part of Ciderville. A list of cheese styles and cider used in this pairing, along with show notes and photos, can be found at ciderchat.com. Look for episode 25, Jim Wallace, Cider Pairing with a Cheesemaker.
Why am I a Patreon? Let me tell you, in this time when we can find so much out on the internet, finding real value, real content is increasingly more difficult. This podcast, Cider Chat, distills down so much of the bad stuff and leaves us only with good quality content. If we don't support this content, it will go away. And that's why I'm a Patreon, to support content like this. I wish you would be a Patreon too and help Rhea spread the word in Ciderville. This is Wynn Van Merrick from Forsap Sugar Shack in Lineborough, New Hampshire, and you're listening to Cider Chat.
That was so sweet from the man at the Sugar Shack. That is Wynn Van Merrick, who sent a little ditty on why he supports Cider Chat via Patreon. And you can too. Just go to ciderchat.com and you can see the link on the show notes to this episode that would help you become a patron of this podcast. Well, it's a wrap, Ciderville. We're ready to roll out of here. Let me thank the founding sponsor for this podcast, who did step up and said, hey, send me the media kit. I want to keep this chat thriving. That is Tiger and Linda at CiderCellars.com. Remember, that is cellars, as in the place where you keep your barrels for storage. And they are importers of UK cider to the US. Awesome people. Give them a shout out. Check them out at CiderCellars.com. This is Rhea Windcaller signing off for now. I look forward to seeing you in Ciderville.